The Duro are no longer confined in the caves of legend and story, but are reincarnated upon your surface. Many of your eminent scientists, driving forward with the perfection of ever more prodigious blast forces, are reincarnated Duros. Because of their prior lives as cannibals and degenerate beings, they are prone to exert themselves for destructive ends, since they fall easily under the astral influence. 13. Picture text follows. Satan approaching the confines of the Earth, according to Gustave Dore's artistry. This was after Satan guided the unfortunate inhabitants of the planet Maulk to their doom. Millions of Maulkians fell with him and are facing the same crisis, and the same choice. Again, now. At this point we might mention the stories related by Gray Barker in his book They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, concerning the black-suited men. These worthies apparently paid unscheduled visits to saucer investigators with the idea of shutting them up when they got too near the truth. In my view, some of these saucer investigators may have stumbled on this center of the Earth concept, probed into it, stirred up these forces and consequently been handled harshly by their earthly representatives. These black-suited gents would probably be the allies on your surface who are without morals or mercy. They endeavor in every case to fill those they visit with fear. This is a side to the UFO which is best left to those who not only know how to deal with these forces, but are authorized to do so. Trevor, in our solar system are there any other physical beings like us? Asht R, no. All beings on other planets in your solar system are etherics. On your planet, as you now know, there are two kinds of beings, physical and astral. Outside the Earth-Moon system in your solar system, all are etheric. Trevor, how far from the surface of the Earth in our measure do the astral regions extend? Asht R, 125,000 miles. Within them, the astral beings are confined. At certain times of the year, travel to the moon is possible to the astrals when the astral shells of the two bodies overlap. When these two shells separate, however, any entities on the moon are cut off from the Earth until the next time the astral shells overlap. No physical or astral entity can go beyond the Earth-Moon system. Trevor, three-dimensional craft have been seen in addition to the others described in these contacts. They are believed to be of a mechanical type. Are there such ships and where do they come from? Asht R, yes, there are such ships. They come from the continent you call Antarctica. Before the Lemurian flood and rebalancing of the Earth on its present axis, this was a great civilization. It was frozen quickly and its splendor swallowed under the ice. One city remains above the ice with a few dwellers. They have these craft and there are also some in Tibet. These dwellers are entirely separate from the forces in the center of the Earth and plan hostility to no one. Mechanically propelled, these craft also outperform earthly aircraft. The Kingdom of the Earthbound. Trevor, what is the nature of the astral regions around the Earth? Asht R, the astral world is divided into two broad sections. First, there are the bodiless entities from your surface, the so-called dead people, who must become incarnate again in order to pass completely to the etheric state. Some of these entities are waiting what will be their last incarnation. Others are those who have had their carnate existence ended abruptly or accidentally, such as criminals or soldiers. All these entities have in common the intense desire to become fleshly once more, in order that they may qualify to be no longer earthbound, when their incarnations terminate. This is the Garden of Waiting. There are also the monstrosities and phantasmagoria which are degenerate thought forms. The other great section of the astral world is the astral regions of evil, which surround and interpenetrate the Earth, inhabited by beings who are forever discarnate and forever earthbound by decree of the great God of the universe. These beings cannot enter the Garden of Waiting. It is against these forces that we of the etheric world are warring. Trevor, what form does this war take? Is it a clashing of spaceships in combat? Asht R. This is not a matching of violences, as you suggest, but a battle for the control of earthly minds. Our purpose is to overcome the destructive influence. the physically violent influence which the Dark Ones seek to exert over mankind. Our purpose is to nullify the astral influence by restraining beings devoted to destruction and to physical violence. The Dark Ones seek to relegate the whole world to the darkness wherein they dwell and have power, and thereby increase their influence further. Our task, as decreed by the Heavenly Father, is to nullify, overpower and banish the work of the Dark Ones by good influences upon humanity. This is the true nature of the battle rather than spacecraft versus spacecraft. Trevor, what is the nature of the core of our planet? Is it solid? Or is it hollow? Ashtar, the center of the Earth consists of matter of a density comparable to air, although it is not air. You would term it hollow in your expression. It is here that the forces of Satan dwell. Near the South Pole they emerge in their craft and circle the planet. Clumsy and primitive by our technology, their craft are still greatly advanced over yours, and they are easily able to outperform and to outmaneuver mechanical craft of physical manufacture. They are considerably faster, being capable of speeds in excess of 3,000 miles per hour. Trevor, how far above the surface may the dark forces penetrate and can physical man penetrate this far? That is, will man ever be able in physical form to penetrate this far? Ashtar, the limit of their altitude attainment is 125,000 miles. Physical man is also limited to this extension. In the upper portions of it, however, man in the physical form will exist only with extreme difficulty and after years of training and development. As previously described, when the moon's astral envelope or aura overlaps with that of the Earth, commerce is possible. At times of contact, the astral entities from the core of Shan travel to the moon. There is a Luno Mafia, the Men in Black. Trevor, what is the nature of life on the moon? Are the moon people physical or astral? Ashtar, the moon people are physical in form and astral in allegiance. They are allied with Satan. Trevor, are these craft from downstairs comparable to the Atlantean machines? Ashtar, they are almost identical with those craft. They are, of course, made of a material that is akin to but of a higher vibratory form than your own matter. They are, therefore, not normally visible to your optics. Trevor, is there any broad general method by which the etheric or friendly craft can be distinguished from the astral machines from the center of the Earth? Ashtar, as a general rule you may conclude that all cigar-shaped craft are potentially hostile to your people. These are the craft from the center of the Earth which have carried out and are carrying out hostile acts. Our craft are for the most part heel-shaped or disc-shaped. This is a rule of thumb as you term it, for distinguishing between them. Trevor, are there any basic rules, even if they are broad rules, by which the various craft can be identified when they appear solely as light manifestations? Ashtar, there is a broad general rule which may apply for the purposes of identification. It is not exact, but is a rule of thumb. The true interplanetary craft, the ventless of our forces, will appear to your optics with a manifestation of colored lights, usually green, red and white. They will sometimes appear constantly red and green, other times they will appear to be flashing. Those of the satanic forces seldom exhibit color, but come with white or bluish-white manifestations. This should aid you in selecting the ships with which you might have contact. To be continued with excerpts from Chapter 4, Green Men, Monsters and Skeptics. Pertinent excerpts from A Flying Saucer Classic of the 1950s, Part 5. The UFO picture was still far from complete, even though the communications from Ashtar were filling it in quickly and with bold strokes. Sometimes shocked, sometimes nonplussed, I nevertheless found much that was contained in these communications to be true. In many instances, explanations came to hand for observed phenomena, although these were not always direct answers but rather signposts for the direction of one's reasoning power. Some information had been offered about the various types of craft. Now the question arose of the crews, what were the occupants of these craft like? In the case of the machines purported to come from the center of the Earth? Trevor, by whom are these craft manned? Ashtar, they have a variety of beings in their craft. They may be human-type entities in the astral body, in every way similar to yourself. They may be elemental subhuman slaves of the astrals, or they may be astral monsters of a proportion and type likely to fill you with terror were you to contemplate them. In your measurement, many of them are gigantic, and horrible to behold. The craft may be manned by any or all of these creatures. The silver spheres frequently reported, especially those associated with reports of little men as occupants, are a type of craft launched from the carriers of the Dark Ones. There are several facts which govern the sightings of these things. In the first place, a combination of atmospheric conditions and the physical condition of the viewer may render them visible. In the case of the monstrosities seen by only one person, this may be the case. Certain physical conditions of the viewer may render them visible to one man when they will not be seen by another man beside him. Hence the common term hallucination. But the man who sees these monstrosities is seeing something very real, and while it can be said that the experience is a subjective one in a sense, it is also a view into the unseen worlds which surround and interpenetrate your own. Great confusion is caused upon your surface by the varying descriptions of little men in various types of clothing and so forth. Believe me, it would take many books to fully describe the many types of elementals who dwell in the invisible realms. 15. Unpalatable monsters. There have been instances of pilots seeing some of these saucer entities and going out of their minds as a result. One such incident, presented in what amounts to hearsay form in Major Kehoe's Flying Saucer Conspiracy, concerns an Air Force pilot in Hawaii, sent up on a UFO scramble. He was alleged to have landed in Babbling Terror, after having seen the occupant of one of the UFOs. The Pearl Harbor incident harks back to October 8, 1953 when a voice suddenly cut in on a Salt Lake City radio station and proclaimed, "I speak from a spaceship. You cannot reach me, but I can, with ease, reach you. If you saw me, I should be so horrible in your eyes that you would be scared to death." Trevor, are the Dark Ones' craft propelled by the same propulsion system as yours? Ashtar, no. They use an electromagnetic drive on some of them. Others are propelled by a jet and hydraulic system. That their propulsion systems are less than ours is indicated by the fact that they have a maximum speed of 3,500 miles per hour in your measure. The different propulsion systems give rise to the different light manifestations, although these are a rule of thumb and not an arbitrary and fixed method of identifying the different types. They also have discoidal machines similar to our ventless. Trevor, on occasions, elementals have been seen stealing water, or water has disappeared in large amounts following saucer sightings. Why is this? Ashtar, water is a valued commodity in the center of the earth where they dwell. One of the reasons they come to your surface is to steal water, which they do from lakes, rivers, reservoirs and tanks as convenience dictates. I first stumbled into the concealment aspects of the UFO at the spacecraft convention held at Giant Rock, California in 1956. My attention became drawn to a section of the sky beyond the head of Frank Scully, who was speaking at the time. I saw several clouds appear and disappear in a strange fashion, for they hung motionless and unaffected by the wind that blew quite strongly. I noticed that the vapor trail of a high-flying plane was rapidly dispersed, while these clouds continued to materialize and dematerialize. I took off on foot across the desert for perhaps a couple of miles, until I came to a point just below the clouds. One thinned out and began to disappear. I perceived a reddish glow with a rotary effect within it for a few brief seconds. Then, about a minute later, I perceived the reddish glow once more. But it was obscured almost instantly by a condensation of vapor which gave the appearance of a small cloud. From this series of events I deduced that as the craft became visible, for some reason or another, it was capable of condensing water vapor around itself, remaining invisible to the eyes, even though it was probably at our visual frequency, inside the cloud. Part 6. In the book Into This World and Out Again by George Van Tassel, The statement is made that there are three substations established in the vortex of the Earth, whatever that might be. One of these stations, named Shanxia, is purported to be 1,500 miles square inches our measure. Yet, we cannot see this enormous object. Because we cannot see the object, the scientific attitude has been that such statements are pure balderdash and properly belong in the science fiction field. The information regarding these satellites was on record before Dr. Tom Bohr and Dr. Lapaz located the so-called moonlets, and may be the reason these gentlemen began looking for them. Until their location, astronomers were quite sure there was no heavenly body closer to the Earth than the Moon. But even Dr. Lapaz and Dr. Tom Bohr could not see the moonlets, which were alleged to have been detected by a radar. According to George Van Tassel, these space stations are positive to light, and therefore not visible to our positive polarity vision. Trevor, what can you tell us about Shanxia? How long has it been orbiting the Earth? What is its size relative to Shkair, the other base you have near us? Ashtar, Shanxia is the Earth child satellite and has been orbiting your Earth now for almost 2,000 years since the appearance of Jesus the Master upon your surface. 1,500 miles square, it is a complex assemblage of instrumentation which permits constant surveillance of your surface and the beings upon it. Before very many months have passed. Although we will at this time give you no earthly measure of when, Shanxia will pass through the atmosphere of Shan, Earth, and a great commotion will be caused by its appearance. It will be visible to physical eyes at that time. Our present altitude is 500 miles and varies considerably from time to time. Shkair is different to Shanxia in that it is a quadrastation. It is not square, but what you call spheroid. Its purposes are also different in our system. 20. Astronomy's false framework. With reference to astronomy, Ashtar had this to say. The most outstanding fact about your astronomers is their unwillingness to learn. There are two basic things in your astronomy which lead to most of its erroneous concepts. Light is not understood by your technology, and light years, the derivative measure of distance which is based on a misunderstanding of light itself. On Shan, Earth, you have not yet begun to understand the true nature of light. We do things with light and through light that would astound your most brilliant minds. These erroneous concepts held by your astronomers lead to treacherous errors in the theories which are based on them. These continue to compound themselves until the whole fabric of astronomical theory on Shan is stretched upon an entirely false framework. Errors of this nature are doubly compounded with the use of spectroscopes for viewing other planets and deciding by this means whether or not life is possible upon their surfaces. To begin with, all conceptions currently held by your astronomers regarding the nature of atmospheric gases, temperature and pressure upon other planets are incorrect. My own home planet, Venus, for example, has many elements in its atmosphere which are unknown upon Shan. Added to this, your scientists do not know the composition of their own atmosphere belt, through 250 miles of which they are looking at the light from other planets. And then, space itself is something of which they know little, although their estimates of what it is are quite authoritative in their own eyes. They imagine it to be a vacuum of some kind, whereas in fact it is filled with a host of things, including etheric currents of which they know nothing. The spectroscope cannot even perform with remote accuracy under these conditions, especially as the outer limits of your own atmosphere are extremely variable and uncertain as to content. There is observational evidence to prove that the etheric concept has validity, strange as it may seem. The classic case of this is the New Zealand sighting where a large fusiform spacecraft as big or bigger than a DC-6 airliner exploded over that country's southern Alps, leaving a tall column of smoke. If the physical theory is to hold true for all the UFO, there simply had to be wreckage of this large craft. None was ever found. Can we get an explanation of these happenings from an invisible intelligence? Ashtar, on occasions, craft crash for one reason or another, not the least of which is the striking of giant nodes in the space currents on which we travel. These disintegrate the craft, even as a surge of power will burst open an electric motor not protected by fuses. Sometimes, in the disintegration process, the etheric matter may be rendered visible as it becomes subject to gravity and lands upon Earth. It will, however, rapidly degenerate into jelly, then into liquid, and then into gas, from which condition it returns to the universe once more. 21. In the rudimentary schooling given to most people, rain, clouds and wind are part of the weather. Meteorologists may not consider these part of the weather. I do regard rain, clouds and wind as part of the planetary weather and, since these are the agencies through which radioactive rain is delivered to human habitations, I cannot accept the statements of meteorologists that atom bombs do not affect the weather. What other effects are wrought by the release of radioactive particles we cannot tell. Perhaps these particles, after ascending to great altitudes, are affected by the Earth's polarity to produce strange weather effects. Atomic blasting effects, another view. Ashtar, I have information for you concerning the testing of hydrogen derivative weapons at Enoch. The continued release of these blast forces, both at Enoch and elsewhere on Shan, has produced a change in your planetary weather system that is irrevocable. Your seasons, as you term them, are now moved forward 8 weeks over past records. Thus, summer extends into October, winter into the end of April. These changes, of course, are permanent. In addition, the axis of the planet has been disturbed, producing irregularities in astronomical observations which are already concerning your scientists. We find it the height of folly and fallacy that your meteorological men cannot correlate these changes to blast forces released. The blasts penetrate not only to the limit of your atmosphere, but beyond into the solar system of which Shan is a part, and into other solar systems. Reactions are produced by this fission of which your scientists are presently unaware. These reactions affect the atmospheric envelope of Shan, through which they are conveyed first by the power of the explosion and subsequently by the planetary wind system. These are not predictions, my friend, these things are in effect today. The airdrop blast of 1956. Ashtar, scientists have already exploded yet another fission device at Enoch. You have already experienced the drop in temperature. There will be more. There will be considerable climatic havoc on your surface. The effect of fission upon the weather is obvious to everyone except the scientists, who do not wish to believe what is obvious to the simplest entity. Your scientists are not satisfied with the sun they have been given, but prefer to make their own. The Creator's work is not good enough for them. This prospect fills us with sorrow. With only US newspaper reports to go by, I submit that there was considerable climatic havoc. Immediately following the May 21, 1956 airdrop bomb, the city of Indianapolis was inundated by torrential rain. This flood was unprecedented in the area. The Idaho floods worsened as hundreds were driven from their homes. An undersea eruption took place off the Hawaiian Islands and record-breaking low temperatures, plus frost, inflicted at least $5 million worth of damage on farmers in U.S. northeastern states. Many northern New England towns had temperatures in the 203 at the end of May. European records of weather at the time are also far from pleasant. Annihilation on the lower astral plane. Trevor, it seems to me that there is too much unanimity in the objections received from the unseen world about atomic blasting. I also note that you seem to regard a certain amount of destruction as being part of our present lives. Is it therefore true that atomic bombs destroy in some way the Dark Ones, or so affects them that they cannot function properly? Ashtar, I am able to answer that in the affirmative. To this extent, the forces I command know that certain evolutionary courses have to be followed by your planet, and it is unfortunate that destruction is a part of this evolutionary plan. There is no way that particular facet of human conduct can be eliminated except by evolution. Therefore, our concern is not so much with explosions, bombing or killing, but with the fission of a living substance, such as hydrogen. The three others are oxygen, nitrogen and carbon. Their symbol is the swastika or the swirling hooked cross. RHC, this is not permitted and we will halt any experimentation of this type. No living substance may be fissionized. The effect of atomic bombs on the dark forces is very profound. The particular form of blast caused by nuclear or atomic weapons sunders the intelligence faculties from the forms they are associated with and scatters these into space where they cannot be reassembled. Thus the atomic bomb means for them annihilation, even as it will eventually mean a similar fate for humanity if employed to excess, at least as far as physical life is concerned. The effect upon the particular molecular structure of the Dark Ones is profound. Therefore you find that practically all communications from them deal with and dwell on this particular thing. It is in a sense a manifestation of the power of the Almighty and it is curtailing their activities considerably. It is also a weapon against them, for which they have no answer. How strange it is after all their depredations that they should suddenly ask someone to be merciful to them. Trevor, what do the present intentions of the Dark Ones portend concerning assaults on our surface? Ashtar, during the next few weeks and months the astral forces will increase their activities along the western coasts of America. Many of their craft will be sighted. Should aircraft of yours be sent against them, they will be destroyed by the agency of a heat ray. Fires of mysterious origin will occur in the Americas and Western Europe. Explosions and unforecasted weather phenomena will be part of their system of attack. Failures in electronic equipment are easily induced by them. Part 7. Should aircraft of yours be sent against them, the flying saucers of the fallen hierarchs from Dub, the Lunar Mafia, they will be destroyed by the agency of a heat ray, said Ashtar to Trevor in regards to his query about the intentions of the Dark Ones. With this reference to a heat ray, it seemed to me that Buck Rogers was coming home to roost. To preclude the possibility that such things could be used is the worst kind of dogma. Trevor, is this heat ray the one which has been reported in some attacks on Earth aircraft? Ashtar, yes, it is a heat ray which has been used to interfere with ignition systems and to start extensive fires in various parts of the world. Trevor, many investigators are anxious to know why the dark forces cause these crashes of planes and collisions causing loss of life. It is not readily apparent to us, nor why or exactly how it is done. Ashtar, after a pause, first let me say that the Dark Ones are highly desirous of causing destruction of airplanes and do so frequently. They would, if it were possible, bring down many more of them if this action would not result in their being detected by some of your people. The reason for this airplane crashing is really very simple for one who has grasped the concept of astral and etheric realms beyond the physical. Frequently, the astrals desire some particular person for a special purpose, perhaps a technician, an engineer, or one of special skill or talent. They wish to abduct him. In other words, Keel gives a chapter to selective abductions in his Fawcett paperback, Our Haunted Planet, 1971. In Antarctica, an American scientist vanished without a trace on May 7, 1965. He was Carl Robert Diss, 26, and he was assigned to the Bird Station, operating equipment to investigate VLF, very low frequency, radio noises for the National Bureau of Standards. He set out to walk from his hut to the main station a short distance away, following a handline that was strung as a guide for the path between the two points. When he failed to appear after 45 minutes, the other scientists went out searching for him in tracked vehicles. If Diss had fallen and was lying in the snow, Ron Sefton, the leader of the Bird Station, explained to William J. Parkinson of the Baltimore Sun, the Huskies would have seen him long before the searchers did. Similarly, if he had fallen and was covered by drifting snow, the dogs would have sighted the mound and rushed out to investigate it. That's the way Huskies are. The search went on for 3 days and covered a 55-mile area around the hut. Diss's own dog, a husky called Gus, disappeared shortly afterwards. Some of the searchers claim they saw mysterious lights and heard engine noises in the distance. Antarctica, of course, is uninhabited except for a handful of international scientists who work very closely with one another, after an airplane crash, continue-r, when the person concerned is released from his physical body after his death, his astral form is seized and taken to the nether regions. This suggests the Lunar Mafia rather than the insectoids. RHC, the crashes are brought about by several agencies.